Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans on the podcast line, wherever you may be. Friends, thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show this week. I do appreciate it. As always, got a great show coming up for you here today. We're going to be over at the newly opened Sazerac House, a very interesting place, interactive museum, all kinds of cool stuff going on, talking about the history of rye, of the cocktail, the Sazerac, booze in New Orleans, and all kinds of other good stuff. We'll be over there in just a minute. But first, we want to let you know about a really cool event that's going to be taking place on December 5th, celebrating Repeal Day here in New Orleans. I guess it was Repeal Day everywhere, but we celebrate it right here in New Orleans and on December 5th. And it's organized by my friend, executive director of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, Tracy Napolitano, who is with us. Tracy, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
Doing good, man. Doing good. So we got this cool event coming up here on December 5th at Antoine's Restaurant in the evening, 8 to 11 p.m., celebrating Repeal Day. What do we got going on, man?
So we decided we need a big repeal party in New Orleans. So we went ahead and partnered with Antoine's, Old Forester, Corbel Champagne, and we are going to kind of do a whole celebration of the repeal of Prohibition. We're asking people to come in period dress. We're going to have food and drinks all at Antoine's. We're going to have a doctor giving you prescriptions to get your drinks. the bartenders will be dressed as pharmacists. So you'll be able to, you know, get your drink from the pharmacy instead of the bar like you did back in that day of the speakeasy.
Yeah, there you
go.
So
we're just going to, you know, we're just trying to create the whole, you know, atmosphere of what happened back then for the repeal of Prohibition on December 5th, 1933.
That's going to be a lot of fun, man. And so you're doing it at Antoine's, and they got a really neat space upstairs that you're using for this, right?
Yes, we're doing it in the Japanese room is the biggest room we're using up there, and then we've got the three rooms across the hall from it. So each room's going to have a different theme. So in the Japanese room, we're going to have food and whiskey. In the other rooms, we're going to have champagne cocktails. We're going to have a gin room. The type of things that you would have gotten to drink during Prohibition. You know, like Bourbon Fest is about the bourbon and the whiskey. This is going to be about the type of cocktails and drinks you would have gotten during the 1920s and 30s at a speakeasy.
Now, here's the important part, though, that I think we want to let people know is they're not going to find things like lead and all kinds of other stuff. These are going to be above board cocktails that aren't going to make you sick, right? You're not going to go blind.
Correct. Exactly. There will be spirits that are made today from the Old Forester Whiskey Row line, which is created from original recipes that Old Forester was making back then. So we're going to have the Whiskey Row series. I believe the cocktail list is coming from Jackie Zycan. We're going to use cocktails she's created from the Prohibition era. Like I said, we're going to have a champagne room where you're going to be able to get Corbel champagne, which was actually on the menu at Antoine's right after the repeal of Prohibition. So was Old Forester. So we're trying to recreate things that were on that menu at Antoine's.
Got it. So they'll be good cocktails. So that I just want to make sure people don't think that they're going to go blind if they go to the event. So it's going to be a lot
they
of fun.
They will not, yeah.
Good. Okay, right on. Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of fun. December 5th, 8 to 11 p.m. Where can they find out more information, Tracy? Where can people get tickets? It's an all-inclusive ticket.
Sure. It's an all-inclusive ticket, food and drink, and you can get it at our website, NOLAREPEALDAY.com, or you can get it from our Facebook page, NOLA Repeal Day. And we're going to kick it off at around 11 o'clock. We're going to have everyone dressed. We're going to have just a great time.
That's cool. 8 o'clock. Starts at 8 o'clock. Goes till 11, right?
8 o'clock, correct.
Yeah.
8 to 11.
How much are tickets, Tracy?
Tickets are $125, and like we said, that's all-inclusive. That's food and drink while you're there at the event.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you very much, Tracy. So, friends, go check that out, NOLAREPEALDAY.com. You can find it on Facebook and all that good stuff. We're going to take a little break here, friends, on the NOLA Drink Show. And then, as promised, we're going to be over at the Sazerac House learning about what they got going on there. It's worth a visit. Friends, stay tuned out here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks, friends, for listening to the show. I do appreciate it, as always. And as you know, if you're listening at the top of the show, we are here at the newly opened Sazerac House here on the corner of Magazine and Canal, and I am pleased to be joined by my two guests. First of all, it's David Bach, who is the Distillery Operations Manager. We wanted to get that right, David, so...
I think that's right. I think that's what.
Does that sound good enough?
It sounds about right.
We just distillery guy or something. Okay, cool. Right on.
Production.
We call him the right guy.
The right guy. I like that. And who's just telling us that is Miguel Corozano, and Miguel is the general manager here at Sazerac House. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. And so we're sitting in a beautiful space here, and it's a really interesting facility, and we'll let you know more about it as we go. But I guess I'll throw this question to you, Miguel, first. You all opened up a few weeks ago, and this is very much a museum experience here at the Sazerac House. It's not just a bar. I thought it was a bar and with some cool displays, but I was way wrong.
Yes, tremendous.
Happens a lot.
We opened back at the beginning of October, and it is a three-story interactive immersive experience. We call it a spirited experience because we're bringing people through the history and traditions of cocktails and spirits, and how much New Orleans really has contributed to the culture over the years. So we are showcasing a lot of that through pieces that engage you and get you to feel more in the time period, whether it is the 1800s or whether we bring you all the way onto current time. Mm-hmm. With some of our other products.
And it's very interesting because there's a very nice traditional vibe in here, as you're saying, but then it also meshes and is melded with a lot of high-tech interactive technology and display stuff.
That's right. We have several interactive pieces that would get you to dive deeper into cocktail making. For example, we have down on the second floor a set of virtual bartenders. Here you have four different bartenders for the commonly found in the city, whether it is a dive bar, a contemporary style bar, a rum bar, or a French Quarter classic. And this bartender virtually will show up in front of you and start making you cocktails, going through the history of that particular cocktail, some techniques that you can perfect at home, and at the end present you with a drink that we say is zero calories, and it's guaranteed no hangovers.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
Because it's awesome. All virtual.
Cool. So the idea here, friends, is that, and if I don't want to be mistaken, so it is a museum, so you want to come and give yourself some time to come and check it out and check out the displays and the exhibits. But also, and I'll throw this question to you, Dave, is that it's also a functioning distillery.
Correct. There is a whole production aspect to the Sazerac House as well. We have an on-site distillery where we'll be making Sazerac rye whiskey, as well as a Peychaud's area that will be macerating botanicals and bottling's Peychaud's bitters.
Yeah, very cool. And that's part of the New Orleans collection that Sazerac Company holds, the two products that you just mentioned, correct?
Correct. Majority of the products that we have here at the Sazerac House have ties to New Orleans,
okay,
which is the brands that we have featuring.
Gotcha. And that also includes Ohen. What else am I forgetting here? Herb Saint.
Oh, man. Are you ready? You ready to run this down? All right. We can talk about Myers Rum, Wheatley.
Wheatley Vodka.
Wheatley Vodka.
Are those all in the New Orleans collection, though, or is that just kind of the broader Sazerac company stuff?
So here at the Sazerac House, we selected 19 brands that have roots and connections to the city.
Okay,
and they are into various categories, whether it is the bourbon category, the whiskey category, the American whiskey category. And then we have one called New Orleans Specialties. And all under the New Orleans Specialty brand, we have various different type of liqueurs that are part of it, as well as a whiskey. Sazerac rye whiskey is part of it. So as David started, he started mentioning some of the rums, because we also do have a section in the building where we're aging rum on site. Hopefully that rum in the near future will be blended here on site and then bottled on site as well. But within the portfolio of Sazerac Company, we selected three rums to represent New Orleans that have those roots and connections to the Port of New Orleans, particularly in the Caribbean.
Okay, got it. And yes. We'll probably get into that a little later.
We will get that a little bit later.
I think
that
will be interesting to talk about.
Yes, but we start with the products that are featured in the Sazerac cocktail. So those are the ones that predominantly take place on the third floor, where the introduction of Sazerac Rye Whiskey or Sazerac de Forge Cognac. We also talk about Herb Saint and how much Herb Saint contributes in, to the cocktail itself and the flavor and the, mm-hmm. the tasting profile of that of the cocktail. Patios Bitters and production of Patios Bitters, as David mentioned, here on the third floor as well. And then when you go down to the second floor, we give you then the rest of the products being featured, Ohan being one of them.
Okay,
Ohan is an anise liqueur. Mm-hmm. It is one that is very popular during Mardi Gras time. The crew of Rex.
Connected to the crew of Rex.
Yeah, normally mm-hmm. they cheer to Mardi Gras or Mardi Gras Day with an Ohan cocktail. Mm-hmm. And that's one that we are very proud to have here. But aside from that, we just introduced to the market a gin called Henry Ramos, mm-hmm. Named after Henry Ramos, the inventor of the gin fizz. Mm-hmm. We also have, what other products? Oh, we have a coffee liqueur.
That's right, Colombo.
We're sampling today, as a matter of fact, that on the floor, our visitors today will be able to enjoy a sample of Colombo coffee liqueur.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this, you guys. Let's talk about the Sazerac, because we have a Sazerac in front of us.
Yes.
We're doing radio, so I need to give visual to people. And so rye is the primary component these days in Sazerac. But you mentioned this, Miguel, that originally the drink was made and its connection to New Orleans was made with cognac. And we've talked about, we don't have to go too far down the road of the history of it, but the location of the Sazerac house is fairly near within spitting distance, we can say, of where the original merchant exchange bar, which then became the Sazerac house on Exchange Place and Royal, is. And so there's a deliberate storytelling that goes on with the connection to the cocktail and its original location.
Right, and that's how we begin our story. Our story here at the Sazerac House starts at the 100 block of Royal Street at that original site of the Sazerac Coffee House. As you mentioned, it was not always called the Sazerac Coffee House. It was part of Merchants Exchange, a coffee house within that facility. Over the years, it developed an affinity for a particular spirit that was offered. And that was Sazerac de Forge Cognac, mm-hmm. or Sazerac de Forge Feast Cognac. Mm-hmm.
That's the brand they were exclusively using in their version of the Sazerac, which was a bitters cocktail with cognac and bitters.
Well, right. it was a spirit that was offered at the time at that coffee house, and it was served in many other places within the city of New Orleans, but in this one particular coffee house, it became very popular.
And it became synonymous, correct.
Yeah, yeah. And it became so popular that people started calling out the place by the name of that cognac in itself. But then in the 1870s, cognac became extinct here in New Orleans, or very difficult to find, right. or very expensive to find. And at that time, Thomas Handy, who was the owner of the coffee house, made the decision to introduce American rye whiskey into the recipe of the Sazerac cocktail. So now when you look at the Sazerac cocktail of today, it is Sazerac rye based. Which is an American rye whiskey, mm-hmm. Herb Saint as a substitute of absinthe.
For absinthe, yep.
We have Patios Bitters, and of course, lemon and sugar.
I think, and tell me if this is the case, you guys, I think it was very interesting with Handy and then Amade Patio, and that was why I was asking the question specifically about that cognac and the Sazerac cognac being used, because it became very just synonymous with the place, but exclusive, and that the idea was that he was only going to serve Amade Patio's bitters, and then only use at first the cognac, Sazerac cognac, and then the rye, or using rye. And I think it was an interesting attempt to brand, really, wasn't it?
It was.
Is that a fair way to characterize it?
In a way, it was a location where Antoine Patio, or we have records that Antoine Patio introduced his bitters as part of an opportunity to blend it with spirits. We do have valid records that indicate dates and times when this happened back in the 1850s. Whether it was served at other coffee houses at the time or not, we do not necessarily know.
But seems pretty likely.
We do know for a fact that it was served in this one particular coffee house.
Right.
To the point that it became synonymous for that cocktail, and mm-hmm. people started calling out by name, and that's when. We say that the first branded cocktail was created, and it was a Sazerac cocktail, because mm-hmm. people were calling out a cocktail by name, and at that time it was a Sazerac.
Right, and the name of the place.
Correct. It wasn't until turn of the century at the beginning of the 1900s, when Thomas Handy also started creating a bottled cocktail, and he named the bottled cocktail a Sazerac cocktail.
That didn't last very long, did it?
It actually did. It lasted through Prohibition.
Oh, it did? Okay.
And actually post-Prohibition. So, of course, it stopped production during time of Prohibition in New Orleans. But back in 1930s, in 1933 or so, production of that cocktail continued. And it continued all the way through the acquisition of this company by the current owners
So the pre-made Sazerac bottle cocktail that lasted that long. I had no idea. Okay. Very interesting.
Yeah. When I was chatting with Mr. Bill Goldring just a few days ago, and he mentioned that when they acquired the company, or his father acquired the company, it came with a few cases of this pre-bottled cocktail.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Let me ask you, you guys, we've got about a couple minutes here before we're going to take our first break, but David, this is a really well put together Sazerac.
Yes, I did not make it.
You did not? Right. I'm going to trust that our good friend Matt Ray was probably the one who made it, right? Who's a hell of a bartender. But to you, what makes, you know, obviously rye is the key component here that we're talking about for our base spirit, but just, you know, in your own personal taste, because you've been around the scene for a while, it's an important cocktail to make that has to demonstrate some balance. It's really easy to screw one of these up. And what makes a good one for you?
It is very easy to screw these up. I mean, I think the spice is tempered with sugar and citrus on the tongue is what you'll find. The bitters also round out the whole flavor that you'll see in there. And the citrus brings in a nice light sweetness to the finish mm-hmm. of a good Sazerac cocktail. That's kind of what I'm looking for, running around town drinking these.
Yeah, it is an interesting cocktail because it actually seems deceptively simple in the ingredients. The balance and the quantity of the ingredients are radically important. You can easily step out of the bounds of what is a Sazerac.
And that's, for us, it's one of those very critical pieces that we enjoy discussing with the public as they come through the Sazerac house, is the opportunity to make at home a perfect Sazerac. And the balance of the Sazerac rye or American rye whiskey and the rinse of herb saint mm-hmm. and the fact that it's just a rinse, you're not pouring it into the cocktail itself, the fact that the cocktail has to be chilled mm-hmm. when served, and that mm-hmm. the glass has to be chilled when served as well. All of those components really make that cocktail even become better.
Right.
So a good sign of a Sazerac cocktail is when it's served chilled in the chilled glass.
Yep, and with good balance. How many dashes of bitters? Because this is always a point of contention.
Three.
Three dashes of bitters. Okay, wow. We'll have to do another show where we argue just about the quantity of bitters in a Sazerac. And it's not coming from me.
Official recipe. So as you know, in 2008, the Louisiana legislature named the Sazerac cocktail as the official cocktail of the city of New Orleans.
Miguel, you just stole from me what I was going to say when we ran into the break. But okay, go ahead.
But it was then that we were able to then identify a perfect recipe for this cocktail. And that's the one that we abide for. So it is three dashes of Patience bitters onto that one sugar cube.
Okay, there you
go. Create a nice paste and then continue from there.
Gotcha. All right. Friends, we're going to talk about how much bitters to put in a Sazerac cocktail during the break, which we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We are at the Sazerac House chatting with Dave and Miguel. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening. We're at the Sazerac House chatting with Dave and Miguel. We had a little discussion about bitters during the break. No ultimate result here, but three sounds pretty solid to me. And we're also talking about how Miguel is having a great hair day. So it's really important stuff that we're covering here on the NOLA Drink Show. It's hard-hitting drinking journalism that we do here. But what we're going to do during this segment, we're going to kick to you primarily, Dave, because we're going to taste a couple expressions of rye and talk a little bit about what rye is and how it differentiates itself from the larger whiskey world.
You got it. So the first glass you have in front of you is what we call new make rye or white dog. So this is straight off the still. We've just proofed it down a little bit. And if you smell this, what you'll notice is it's a little bit more spicy than what you'll find in bourbons or other whiskeys. That's because of the rye grain. Mm-hmm. For Sazerac rye and rye whiskey, it has to be above 51% rye grain, which is what you'll find in our Sazerac rye. The other two grains that we put in there are going to be your corn and your malt. Those are proprietary levels at which we put those in. But because we put so much rye in there, it does make it more spicy, more almost hot than what you would find everywhere else. If you want to take a little sip.
Yeah. Can you tell us, Dave, what is number two on the depth chart, proportion-wise, not necessarily the number?
No.
Or are you not allowed to sell?
No.
Okay.
No. Why would you want to know that? Just come here and have ours.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Just wanted to know which. Okay. And we also have our gatekeeper here, Anna, who's over here making sure we don't say anything.
She was giving me death stares. No big deal.
That's why you're sitting behind me, Anna. So go continue. Sorry.
So yeah, the nose is really pungent. The spice level's up there. You get a nice tingle all the way out throughout your tongue. You'll notice on this as well. What I think is really great is when we switch to our next glass, which is when it comes out of the barrel, the finished product. This is out of the barrel, or out of the bottle, rather. You'll find that it has really mellowed out with the years of aging that's happened in the barrel.
How many years do we age?
We're going between 5 to 7 years right now.
Okay.
What we find is the product that we're looking for has this more of a mellow flavor, but the spice is still there. But now the spice has kind of moved towards the back end.
It's not as upfront.
It's not as upfront as you find. It's more on the finish right there. You can also see that by that whiskey, rye whiskey, sitting in the barrel and the expansion contraction of the wood and having it flow in and out of the char and in and out of the wood, it really mellows it out and makes it more palatable to drink and more enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't enjoy White Dog, because I do, but the finished product coming out of the barrel is something really special.
Because we get the sweetness starts to pop a little more, right?
You got it, and all the sugars from the barrel and everything like that. Yeah. You got it. Those all become more present and more available and a better product.
Yeah, but you still get the baking spice note in there, so the rye still stands up through that whole thing. But
absolutely.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit then, what makes rye rye for the most part then is, frankly, it just needs to be 51% rye, correct?
Correct. Unlike bourbon, which has specific qualifying agents to make it bourbon, rye whiskey, you really just need to have 51% rye grains as part, at least 51% rye grains as part of your mash bill. You can do whatever else you would like. There's no real big standard. It depends on whether it's going to be a straight rye or a blended rye or anything like that. Mm-hmm. That'll change it. But as far as rye whiskey, as long as your mash bill is correct, you can pretty much make rye whiskey however you want. Rye whiskey, again, is America's spirit in that it was one of the easiest to whiskeys to grow in growing America. George Washington had a rye distillery, right? Mm-hmm. Because rye was so prominent in the Americas.
So with rye also then, like in your case, so we have one grain that we can play with a little bit, right? And I'm not asking you to tell me exactly what y'all do, but the malt that's used and how the malt is treated can change the characteristic of a whiskey, but also a rye in particular, correct?
Correct. Our malt, your malt can. But all right, so we're going to get
a little more technical on the podcast only thing. But,
yeah. Malt is an agent that will affect the flavor of the rye whiskey. It can affect it depending on the type of malt you use. We have gone through many variations and when producing this rye to find the one that we like and enjoy. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that we're going to stick with. And that's the one that we are continuing to produce and try to perfect on the first floor here.
Gotcha. And you are producing some, as we talked about here, that's being made on this facility, but it's following the same recipe and same spec as the stuff happening up in the mothership, right?
You got it. So we have to actually make our goal is to make the same product that they make at Buffalo Trace. Obviously, we're actually on a much smaller scale, but we still need to have, when you open this bottle of Sazerac rye, to be the same thing you would experience anywhere else, where you would buy it anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a whole lab on two that you can look at and have all these great machines in there so that we can make sure that what we're producing out of our still is as close, if not almost the exact same that we're making, which is very tough because we're on a barrel a day. That's our production rate, is a barrel a day here, unlike Buffalo Trace, which is making, 50 to 60 barrels a day. Something
sure,
massive.
Sure, absolutely. We got to keep everybody in supply.
Correct. I do not have the capability to supply the United States with the amount of Sazerac rye.
We were joking earlier that what you guys are doing here will keep the facility afloat and maybe a handful of blocks around us. So,
with the level of consumption.
Keep the retail shop.
The retail shop. That's what we're really worried about.
Tell me if I'm wrong here, you guys, too, because one of the things I'm noticing on the White Dog is the corn is a lot more prevalent to me, which sort of makes sense with the aging. I think that would probably soften that a little bit.
The corn goes away, you mean, with the aging, but it's more forward.
I get what the corn is bringing to the table on the White Dog a little bit more than I do on the barrel-aged one.
I could absolutely see that. And I think that's, again, just with the aging and the filtration of the carbon and all that kind of stuff that happens in the barrel. Corn, as we know, tends to soften as it sits there in a barrel, no matter what, whether it's bourbon or whiskey or anything. So it does kind of mellow the spirit out and not make it as hot as it could be if it was just a straight only, or if the rye bill was massive or whatever the rye bill happens to be.
Gotcha. And we are using white American oak.
Correct.
Barrels. Yep.
White American oak barrels, charred. We here at the Sazerac House do not have the space to store these barrels. So what we'll do is I'll load about 40 to 50 full of good whiskey, and then I'll send them all the way back to our sister company, Buffalo Trace, where they'll age in their rick houses. Mm-hmm. They'll sit in there aging for 5 to 7 years, and they'll spread them out throughout their houses so they age evenly and well, and then after 6 years, they'll come back to us, and then we'll be able to bottle those here at the Sazerac House.
Cool. The level of char is another way you can manipulate this, correct?
You can. Again, we try to stick to what Buffalo Trace is using up there for what they're doing.
Okay.
So I just try to follow that same format and try to keep going with what the good product that they've established.
Yeah, sure. That's great. And I think, because what we want to tell people is, you know, trying to get at is letting people know we're following the script here when we're making most whiskeys in the world. I know there's some variation on that.
Yes.
But then where you can play with the variables to give it your own stamp are in these places.
You can play with all types of stuff. You can play with, the mash bill is a huge one to play with. Mm-hmm. The amount of char on the barrel is a huge one. The size of the barrel is a huge one. Where you're aging, if you're aging in Kentucky or if you're aging in Louisiana, right? Mm-hmm. Louisiana, we have one temperature, hot.
Hot.
But up in Kentucky, they have cool mornings and warm afternoons. So that expansion and contraction of the wood really changes. The humidity outside depends on how much of the alcohol in the barrel evaporates versus how much stays in there. So it all changes and it all can vary, and we really have no idea what's going to happen until the very end. So I can have my White Dog taste exactly like what theirs tastes like, but in 6 years, we're going to open those barrels up and see what happens.
And see what's different. And thank you for bringing that point up too, Dave, because we are talking about essentially a living organism here, aren't
we?
And so keeping consistency is
your
best shot.
We're taking our best shot at keeping it the same, but there's no real telling.
It's going to have its own character.
It's going to have its own character. Our still is not what they're using. It's the closest thing we can do to try to show what we're after, but it's a waiting game, and it's actually the fun part of making whiskey. Like it's delayed gratification on what we're producing. It's just not immediately. You can't get immediately product out there that you can drink. I mean, yes, you can drink White Dog, but you don't want to bust this out when your friends are coming over to hang out and, you know, enjoy stuff. You're like, hey, guys, let's burn some tongues off. Come try this.
we're clearly professionals and academics here. This is why we're tasting it.
That's right.
We know what we're doing.
Well, I just wanted to show the barrel, right? Yeah. This is amazing how much that barrel changes the flavor of that spirit. It really is just crazy what can happen.
Absolutely. Well, let's do this, guys. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back. We're going to shift gears to a different distillate. We're going to go to rum. We're going to talk about the Planner's Punch. Come on back. We're going to stay until it's through our soul. We taste all that low. Come on and let the good times roll. We're going to stay until it's through our soul. Down yonder, down on the farm. Down yonder, where I was born. Way down yonder on the farm. Raise that chicken and raise that corn down yonder. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We are here at the Sazerac House right here on Canal and Magazine. We are chatting with Miguel and Dave. And hey, guys, thanks again for being on the show. I appreciate it. And hosting and tasting us on some deliciousness. We're going to kind of shift gears because we've been talking about whiskey there for a little bit. And now we're going to talk about rum, also an important spirit here in New Orleans. Ties in, of course, to our port and the sugar trade and all kinds of other stuff. But I'm not going to steal your thunder, Miguel, like you did to me. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the Planter's Punch that we're tasting here. And that's an old, fairly, it's really kind of an ambiguous cocktail on a lot of levels, but...
It is. So if you were to visit the Sazerac House and you reach the second floor, at that point, we introduce you to other type of spirits, in rum included. So we have created our own rum section that we call the rum rig, because you're actually walking into what would have been a warehouse, where we have barrels on display, as well as aging rum in barrels within that same floor. So you can start to get some of the aromas of what it will be like to be in a warehouse out in Kentucky, but or in the Caribbean. But in this case, you're in New Orleans. Mm. So as I mentioned at the very beginning, we have selected three specific rums to be part of our portfolio and represented here at the Sazerac House. One being Myers Rum. We have Cane Run. And just recently launched a new line called Young and Wolf. Mm-hmm. Young and Wolf is a three-expression line of rums that showcases rums from Trinidad and Tobago. We have Guyana and Barbados. Fantastic rums for sipping. If you like whiskey and you like to sip on whiskey neat or on the rocks, you will love these rums as well.
Miguel, are you guys working with local producers in those locations to do this for you? How's that working?
That's right. So that the way that it worked is we worked with various distillers within the regions that mm-hmm. we selected the liquid from, had it blend and have it produced the way that we wanted to, mm-hmm. selected it the way that we wanted it to be selected, and got to the point of flavor profile that we were wanting to represent the island or the region.
Showcase the terroir and so on.
Yeah. And that is what we bottled. And mm-hmm. it is only available right now here at the Sazerac House, and it soon will be available in other markets as well, but primarily here at the Sazerac House. So when you get into that rum experience, what we showcase is Myers. And we do so through the Myers Planter's Punch. Our variation of the Planter's Punch at the Sazerac House is, instead of aromatic bitters, we utilize Peychaud's bitters. We like that fruity note that Peychaud's bitters brings to it, the cherry mm-hmm. Profile. It really works well with lime mm-hmm. In a Planter's Punch. And for those of you who do not know what a Planter's Punch is, you take Myers rum, you take some sugar, you take
lime,
and a few dashes of bitters. Yeah. In our case, it's Peychaud's bitters.
Right, and that makes sense. That's why I said it's sort of historically an ambiguous cocktail, because even that, people have had variations of what they would call Planter's Punch that don't have those four ingredients specifically. But most Planter's Punch, that's the four things that we're looking
Normally,
for.
Normally, aromatic bitters will be what it is used more predominantly. But for us, it was important to showcase a section of rum connecting New Orleans to the Caribbean. The fact that the Port of New Orleans was that entry point of the United States for the rest of the world in many ways, mm-hmm. In the Caribbean being one of them, the Caribbean trade, and the connection to Haiti, the connection to Barbados, the connection to all the those other islands out there in the Caribbean that brought in sugarcane and molasses. Mm-hmm. And the fact that rum became known as the spirit of the Americas before American rye whiskey was introduced. So it is a fascinating category. It is one that we were very proud to showcase and have, and one that we could have the ability to continue introducing new ways of consuming rum. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't always have to be on a very sweet cocktail. It could only be also be enjoyed neat.
Right. It's an important part of the story of New Orleans. And this doesn't really have anything to do with you guys, but I'm going to plug the show from last week, because we had Dr. Jessica Harris, whom I'm not know if you know who she is. She's a culinary historian who focuses on the African diaspora. Mm-hmm. And contributions of African technology, as well as traditions and flavor profiles and things to cooking and eating. And when we talk about New Orleans, it's an important story for people to understand. I want them to go hear that, because we do also talk about things as it relates to New Orleans, as it relates to the slave trade and these sorts of things. Yeah. And this is part of the story.
It is.
And it's important to tell that part of the story. And so I just want to tell people to go listen to the show last week. We're drinking Planner's Punch here. We're not talking about it here this week, but it is why it ties into the history of New Orleans. It's an important part of the story to tell.
No, it absolutely is.
When we go through, I know we talked about there's some of the stuff we go through the museum here, that there's the journey of the white oak to becoming a barrel. So do we talk about the sugarcane trade and the sort of the journey of sugarcane here?
We do a brief introduction to rum history. And okay. We do that, and it's a very creative way that we showcase it down on the second floor, because we utilize the barrels as the projection. In itself. So the rick and the barrels become alive, and that's how we tell the story of rum in New Orleans, particularly with the, as we mentioned, the Port of New Orleans and the introduction of the spirit here, and then consequently the creation and the distillation of product within the city of, mm-hmm. of New Orleans as well. After all, the city is considered the capital of molasses.
Right.
And through that same exhibit, we also showcase how to go through the process of making rum, from harvesting all the way to bottling and blending. The art of blending is one of the areas that we enjoy the most, because that's where our master blender at Buffalo Trace really spends a significant amount of time ensuring that the product that we're enjoying is of quality. So the analytic lab that we have on the second floor is meant for that purpose. Mm-hmm. Not only David uses it for ensuring that the product that comes out of our still is exactly the same as the one at Buffalo Trace, but when we start blending our products here on site, that we have all of the equipment necessary to do it, just like we would in our larger facilities.
Okay, great. And are you guys are gearing up to that, right, David?
We are right now. As Miguel said, we have the barrels down there aging, so we got a couple of years to wait and practice on. I'm sure Drew Mayville, the master blender that Miguel was talking about, will be down to talk more about blending and more about the rum, and especially Young and Wolf that Miguel was mentioning before.
Yeah, with the Young and Wolf, remind me, you said Barbados, and what were the other two spots?
Trinidad is number one.
Okay.
Then we have Guyana, number two, and Barbados, number three.
Okay.
Each of these expressions are numbered. And once we run out of that liquid for that one particular area, it is gone. And then we move on to the next. So they will be in a number four and a five and a six and a seven.
Oh, so they might, you might move on to other countries and other regions as well? Or?
Yep, correct. Okay. So it's a long-term project. It's not a short-term project. We do have a great brand team behind it that are looking and sourcing incredible product and liquid that we could associate with this new brand.
Great. We got about a minute left before we close out the radio portion of the show. So tell people, Miguel, where they can find Sazerac House online and come see you.
Certainly. So the Sazerac House, it is a complimentary entry and sampling session. You can go online at sazerachouse.com, reserve your ticket in advance, come by and enjoy a drink with us.
Excellent. Very good. And Facebook, Instagram, what are the...
We are on Facebook at Sazerac House and on Instagram at The Sazerac House.
Okay, great. Thank you, Miguel.
You're welcome.
Miguel and Dave are on Instagram for another shot with NOLA Drinks, friends. So if you're listening here on the radio, do go to our website, noladrinks.com, or go to your favorite podcast platform and just search for NOLA Drinks or The NOLA Drinks Show. You'll find it there. So I think we're going to geek out a little bit more, talk a little bit more about distillation, maybe taste a couple more things, stuff like that. So again, if you're listening on the radio, remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all.
I said I called your name, but no one came. Now I see. he said, "All these saints and all these sinners will try to bend your ear. It don't matter who you're serving, we're all the same down here."
All right, everybody. Hey, another shot with Noel Drinks. Thanks for sticking around, friends. Brian Diaz here with you as always. Hope you're digging our conversation here with David and Miguel and our visit there at the Sazerac House, having a lot of fun. And we're going to bounce right back over there in just a second for our continuation of another shot with Noel Drinks. We're going to taste some rums. Yeah, pretty good stuff there. And then after that, I'll be back with my parting shot. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks again, friends, for listening in. This week, we're here at the Sazerac House, located on Canal and Magazine Street in downtown New Orleans. And we were talking about something, guys, when we close out the radio portion of the show, pretty interesting that I want to share with listeners, because we were talking about the original Sazerac House that was then, prior was the Merchant Exchange Coffee House. And Coffee House was really just a term for bar in a lot of ways back then, right?
Yes, it was. Coffee houses, it came from that European tradition of going to places to drink coffee. Mm-hmm. It's just that here, of course, in New Orleans, we will introduce other things as well. We couldn't just simply be drinking coffee. We had to introduce a few spirits because people are spending quite a significant amount of time at these coffee houses. And particularly at the one in Merchants Exchange, it was right next to the post office. So imagine at the time, the post office were places where people actually deal business and talk politics and spend a significant amount of time sending out telegraphs and what have you, where the coffee house became a place where people felt comfortable and continued the work that they were doing for the day and needed something a little extra.
And this, Miguel, I think, thank you for saying that, because I think this is important. And we're going to do a show, I was telling you guys during the break, with Dave Wondrich in a few weeks when he comes back to town, talking about the drinking culture in New Orleans and sort of the history and how it affects things and kind of how we consume and how we consumed in the American Quarter, which is where we are here, and then just a block away, block and a half away into the French Quarter. And this idea is that it's not necessarily where you would go and binge drink or have cocktails after work. It's like you would go in and do exactly as you said, conduct business and maybe have a beverage during the day and then go about your business.
You will have a beverage during the day to do business with, and even to the point where we would offer free, well, we as in, as if I'm talking we as if I was there, you know? They will offer lunches for a free lunch for people at a coffee house. Whether it was a bowl of gumbo, or it was some steak and potatoes, or some shrimp dish of some sort, or whatever was in season at the time. But it was in keeping with that length of time that people had to spend at these coffee houses to do business. And that's where people would go to really
Meet, talk, do business, transmit information,
correct,
these sorts of things. So let's briefly touch on this too, because I think it's been a little murky to some people where the location of the Sazerac House, the original location of the Sazerac House, was. So a lot of times you'll read stuff where it says it was on Royal Street, and sometimes people say that it was on Exchange Place. A lot of people call that Exchange Alley, but it's technically Exchange Place. But it straddled that half a block entirely, right? There was an entrance on either side.
That's right. So the original location of the Sazerac Coffee House was on the 100 block of Royal Street or the 100 block of Exchange Place. It had entrance on both sides. It had an entrance on Royal Street and had an entrance on Exchange Place. And the bar itself was 125 feet long. It had 12 bartenders. And the space itself stretched all the way from one end of on Royal Street all the way to Exchange Alley. So if you're familiar with New Orleans and you're familiar with the area, you know currently it is the entrance to the garage of the Wyndham French Quarter Hotel.
Okay, great. And so that, as you said, 125 foot long, we're talking about that spanning almost the whole half a block.
Almost half a block.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
Very cool. So thank you for clearing that up. And we were, you know, it's kind of hard to find now because there's a lot of construction going on, but go, you can check it out from the Wyndham side. And then if you go to the backside of it, what you'll see is people working at the Wyndham that are in the Monteleone taking a break, having a cigarette.
That's right.
So there you go. Well, let's shift gears here a little bit, guys. And we're going to taste three different rums, the Young and Wolf rums that you, we were talking about a little bit earlier. And, David, do you want to tell us which one are we tasting first?
So we there are three expressions.
Okay.
The three expressions are Trinidad, Guyana, and Barbados. So the first one that we have is Trinidad. So if you hand me over that bottle, if
sure.
you don't mind. So Trinidad.
Is this backwards? No.
No.
We put those in the right order. Though,
I turned them around so you could see.
Yeah.
No, but I mean you're turning his. Them around. His glassware.
No, oh,
in
okay.
the right,
all right.
In the right order.
We're good.
So Trinidad's it has kind of a medium body when you take it right off the nose. There's a little bit of silkiness in this rum. Let's go ahead and have a sip, and mm-hmm. which always makes good radio. Everyone,
yeah,
go,
well, that's right. Yeah, so we're sipping the Trinidadian rum first, and yeah. So, what makes this one this one?
Well, I mean, all of these are trying to be in the tradition of the location that they're at, right? So this is more of a traditional Trinidadian rum.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Mayville went down and yeah. tried to blend to get this to be representative of what the area and rum that they're producing tastes mm-hmm. like.
On all of these three expressions, we had our master blender, Drew Mayville. He went in there. He met with so many different distillers. To understand the complexities of the of their particular area rum
and the process,
what makes it special, what makes it unique to their sure. To their region, and what he discovered is he selected some incredible liquid that we could not wait to bottle and not wait to release here at the Sazerac House, because we've been talking about this rum for quite a while, and I had not really had any opportunity to taste it until a few months ago.
Okay.
So is that new? It actually launched here for the first time in our gift shop just a week ago.
So with this rum in particular, you tell me what you guys are getting from it, because and these are all molasses rums, correct?
That's right.
So we're not, yeah. So yep. This one is a little lighter in body than I think you'll see with a lot of molasses based rums. Yep. I think is very fair to say, but there is a very distinct earthiness that I'm getting from this one.
Yeah, and I mean, what we're looking for were rums that you know you're not blending, right?
Yep.
You're sitting around drinking these by themselves over ice or you know mm-hmm. however you'd like.
What are you getting from it, Dave? Now that you're having a sip.
I always like to take a sip while you're asking me questions. I do get a more earthy nose. I mean, the oak is coming through.
There's some light fruitiness to it.
But in a very sort of like light. It's very subtle.
It's very subtle.
It almost pushes to like a citrus kind of range as opposed to like a berry kind of range.
It's a very subtle rum. I feel that this is a great, for those individuals that do not know that rum can be sipped in the same way that whiskey is, mm-hmm. This is a great introduction to it mm-hmm. because it does blend itself very much like a whiskey. It does feel very much like
a
whiskey.
Yeah, and this will perform well in cocktails as well.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the proof on this one, guys?
That's a great question.
Okay, fair enough.
The proof is, let me not get this wrong, 43% alcohol by volume, ABV.
86, okay. Yeah. Cool, awesome. So let's talk about what the next one we're doing is we're doing the...
I'm enjoying it so much that I finished my sample.
So we're now going to move to the northern part of the South American continent and...
My neighbor.
Your neighbor. We're talking about this off air. You come from Venezuela originally, so
yes,
your neighbor to the east.
I come from Venezuela, and part of the history of our country, it included Guyana as part of... Guyana was part of our territory mm-hmm. For many, many years, and it wasn't until sometime in the 1970s or 1960s, I might get that incorrect, but sometime in the 1900s, Guyana became an independent country. And disconnected from Venezuela at all, but mm-hmm. I love it as well.
It's very vegetal.
This one is a smokier.
Yeah.
It is a little funkier. I like this the word funky.
Like it's all,
I refer to Myers as a funky rum as well.
It's all about the distillation process and what it comes across and sits over. And that's what we're getting here is the type of stills, like, you know, the, not super pure. You like whiskey, just like whiskey, you like a lot of junk to come over. Same thing with rum. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of those tannins and everything coming across.
Yeah,
and
I really can definitely tell that this is a molasses-based rum because you're getting a lot of that, the funkiness of it, a little smoky, a little oaky.
And there's a very pleasant sour note to this also.
I can totally see that,
I haven't had a sip yet. You guys got to talk because now I'm going to have a sip.
Don't say anything, Miguel.
That's making for some really good radio right there.
We are the best at radio.
It's actually, you know what? It's really interesting because there's a sour, I get more of a sour note on the nose, less so on the palate. A lot of baking spice
on
the palate, especially on the mid palate.
On the palate, you get a lot of chocolate, mm-hmm. like dark chocolate.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the kind of spiciness. I mean, maybe that's the rye that I've already had speaking.
And it is quite different than
the first two.
Yeah, absolutely. The baking spice note is very, very prevalent mm-hmm. on this, on the palate in particular. That's very interesting. All right, so let's do the last one, gents. So we are in Barbados, kind of the heart of rum production historically in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so in a lot of way, Barbados was that first entry point into the new world or the last stop before you go into the oil world. And in many ways, Barbados was considered the birthplace of rum. I don't claim that it is the birthplace of rum, but it is one.
It was a center of sugarcane production.
It was, in many ways. So this particular rum is one of our favorites here in the house. If you were to talk to any one of my staff and you ask off the three which one is your favorite, you will hear Barbados is it.
Over and over again, yeah.
Because it seems to be the easiest to drink and is one that feels a lot more like a whiskey. So people that do like whiskey gravitate towards this Barbados. It's buttery. It does have a citrus note at the end.
So also you get, and this time I was smart, which is rare for me. I actually had a sip before while you were talking. So I've already had, this time I've had a sip.
So what are you tasting?
Like you said, the buttery note, you definitely taste the molasses in this. You taste the caramel note in this. Yeah. So the barrel portion is coming through pretty clearly. Mm-hmm. And it's a little sweeter on the finish than the previous two to me.
No, it is.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I find like this is
orange
more
peel on the nose too. Sorry, David.
The citrus comes out. Yeah. There's a citrus component that comes out.
It's very much like
The distillate seems to be finer, and from the juice that's produced, and just great.
But on a day like today, here in New Orleans today, it's about 30 degrees, 34, 37 degrees. Imagine just having a glass of this sitting on the back porch.
Inside.
Enjoying.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe outside.
Outside? Oh, sorry.
This warms your body. This warms your body.
I don't mind being here in the second floor. What's the room that we're called that we're sitting
in? So this is actually the organoleptic lab.
Okay.
What does that mean,
David? So the organoleptic lab is because you are using your organs to quantify what you're tasting, right? You're using your tongue, your nose, your mouth, even your eyesight. So we have tons of tasting glasses here that we can make sure that our products are the same and that we can sample these great things. We also have black glasses over there in the corner so that, because your eyesight will affect what you taste as well.
Absolutely.
But yeah, this is our organoleptic lab, which is really a great place to hang out.
And when you say they use your organs, it is all up to health code in here. I just want to make sure that listeners are comfortable with that. That you're just talking your sensory organs.
Sensory for the majority of it. Yes. Like, I just wanted to clarify
that. Well, you know what? It's very interesting to go back because I just tasted the Guianan rum again, and I'm going to go with that as my favorite. I think, not that I don't enjoy them all, but you mentioned a bit of a vegetal note, David, on this, and I'm kind of almost getting like a celery kind of note to it on the palate in particular.
I mean, a lot of, that brown sugar.
So it's not like the pyrazine kind of vegetal note like you'll get in a Cabernet Sauvignon, right, where you get that about like the bell pepper or jalapeno kind of thing. It's more of like a root kind of vegetal note.
I'm just bummed that we're not we're talking while you're sipping.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to like coach you guys through this as much as I possibly can. That when I drink, you talk instead of watching me drink. But and the further we go, the more I drink, and there's less talking, which is probably good for everyone. Frankly.
Just notice he asks us a question, and immediately
and then immediately
the
grabs
sip.
That glass. It's like, I'm good at what I do, Miguel.
I try. So, guys, we're going to close this portion out here on another shot with Noah Drinks. People are thirsty. You probably want to go drink something. But one more time, I'll tell people where we can find the Sazerac House online and on the street, as I like to say.
Certainly. So we are located at the corner of Canal and Magazine Streets in downtown New Orleans. Just across the street from the French Quarter. And you can find us online at sazerachouse.com. That will be the perfect place to go in and learn more about what we're all about. Reserve a ticket to your complimentary tour, or even get tickets to a private tasting so you can come in and enjoy and learn more.
What are the hours, too?
Currently, our hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m.
Excellent. I appreciate it, Miguel. Thank you, David. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening to the show, friends. I do appreciate it, as always. Thanks to our friends at the Sazerac House for hosting us. It was a fun, interesting, and tasty visit. Go check them out. As we noted, interesting interactive exhibits, virtual cocktails, real cocktails, tasting stations. You can see how they make some of the different products, the Peychaud's Bitters and Sazerac Rye when you tour the distillery. They got a gift shop, of course, all this kind of good stuff, and it's free to enter, so check them out. It's a good way to spend an hour or two in the afternoon when you're cruising around downtown New Orleans, and if you're coming to pay us a visit, yeah, put it on the agenda, because you'll learn a lot about the history of cocktails in the city, the history of the Sazerac cocktail, and so much of our culture here in New Orleans connects to the drinking culture and cocktail culture in New Orleans. Not telling you anything that you don't already know. Friends, this is our parting shot. Well, let me tell you a little bit of a programming note here. We're going to be off next week for the Thanksgiving holiday here in the U.S., and the plan is to be back with a new show after that. We'll keep you posted. Just wanted to let you know. And now, friends, this is our parting shot. Wednesday, November 20th is or was, of course, this all depends on when you're listening to the podcast here, the Transgender Day of Remembrance. And we wanted to mention this and bring some of this stuff up to you from some recent reporting. As you know, you can go back to our show, I believe, in August, where we did a show connected to our coverage of Tales of the Cocktail, our sustainability series. And one of those shows was talking about LGBTQ issues in the hospitality and liquor industries. One of our guests and friends of the show, Whit Kathner, who is a transgender man, was on the show. And shout out to Whit, who has now moved from the East Coast to the West Coast in Oregon, but still working in the liquor industry. And he was a great guest. Go check out that show. But we wanted to note this because it's, of course, some very important issues, not necessarily here today as it relates to the hospitality and service industry, but just in general. And again, Wednesday, November 20th, Transgender Day of Remembrance. Friends, from October 18th to September 19th, 331 transgender people were murdered worldwide. Brazil had the highest number with 130, followed by Mexico with 63 and 30 here in the U.S. Some 3,317 transgendered persons have been murdered since January of 2008. An organization called Trans Respect versus Transphobia Worldwide said, quote, "The stigma and discrimination against trans and gender diverse people is real and profound around the world, and are a part of a structural and ongoing circle of oppression that keeps us deprived of our basic rights. Trans and gender diverse people are victims of horrifying hate violence, including extortion, physical and sexual assaults, and murder. In most countries, data on murder trans and gender diverse people are not systematically produced, and it is impossible to estimate the actual number of cases." So bearing that in mind of the statistics that I just gave you, a lot of these are unreported or they are improperly reported due to the misgendering and how that's covered by the media. Sometimes family members, for example, will fail to report the person's gender identification when crimes have been committed, murders in this case. So these numbers are they are much lower than they really are. Of the number that I gave you in October 18th to September 19th, 61% were sex workers. In the U.S., 85% were Native American trans women or trans women of color. The Human Rights Campaign, otherwise known as the HRC, has said 91% of trans women killed in the U.S. throughout this year, 2019, so far were black. Over 80% of trans persons killed in the U.S. through 2019 were under the age of 30. Of all of these murders in the U.S., 68% lived in the South. And getting back to that, the issue of this disproportionate
amount of crimes and violence towards transgender women of color. HRC said, quote, transgender women of color are living in crisis, especially black transgender women. Every one of these lives cut tragically short reinforces the urgent need for action on all fronts to end this epidemic, from lawmakers and law enforcement to the media and our communities. And of course, I would add, in my own personal take, us as individuals. Data from the FBI says that in 2018, 1,445 people were the victims of hate crimes in which sexual orientation was the motivation. Now, not all of these were murders, of course, but physical attacks on transgender people shot up by 34% in 18 over 2017. That overall number was up from, the number in 2017 was 1,338, again, up to 1,445. 189 victims in 2018 were gender identity motivated. That is up from 132 in 2017. This, while hate crimes overall were down slightly in 18 from 17, going from 7,175 to 7,120. But violent hate crimes over that same period were up from 1,204 to 1,183. So when we consider the overall number of hate crimes committed against transgender persons and nonconforming gender persons, and then we consider the amount that are probably misreported or underreported, that is a significant number of the total of hate crimes committed, violent hate crimes committed in 2018, and representative of the overall total in recent years. Now, Gwendolyn Ann Smith, who is the person founder of Transgender Day of Remembrance, started the day, the event, in honor of Rita Hester, who was a trans woman killed in Massachusetts in 1998. And to this day, that murder is still unsolved. Smith said, Transgender Day of Remembrance seeks to highlight the losses we face due to anti-transgender bigotry and violence. I am no stranger to the need to fight for our rights, and the right to simply exist is first and foremost. With so many seeking to erase transgender people, sometimes in the most brutal ways possible, it is vitally important that those we lose are remembered and that we continue to fight for justice. And I agree with Ms. Smith wholeheartedly. And I would also add that not only do we need to remember those that were lost, we also need to respect and protect the rights of those that live. Trans people have the right to exist and to live a life without a fear of violence, a right to equal rights and opportunities, and a life that is the same that all people should experience and enjoy. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.